Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, today we're going to circle back to an organization aimed at helping local businesses and entrepreneurs either get started successfully to sustain themselves through the challenges posed by the pandemic or taking an existing enterprise to the next level. I'm talking about the Connecticut Small Business Development Center. Then we're going to meet a pair of researchers from Fairfield University Center for Social Impact to discuss their recent collaboration with the Norwalk Health Department and its Healthy for Life project, studying the strengths and gaps in Norwalk's food system and offering suggestions on how to help reduce food insecurity in Norwalk and the entire Fairfield County region. And we'll close with the Director of School Choice and Enrollment for New Haven's Magnet Schools. If your child resides in the greater New Haven area, you'll want to hear all about the rich and diverse opportunities available to them at this robust network of charter schools. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Norwalk's Lockwood Matthews Mansion Museum is launching its 8th annual Young Writers Competition on February 1st. The competition, titled A Scientist Visits the Mansion, is ending on June 4th, and an awards ceremony is coming up in November. That competition is open to all middle school students, 6th through 8th grade, and the deadline for submissions, as we said, is June 4th. If you'd like more information on the Young Writers Competition, school tours, and sending submissions, just go to LockwoodMatthewsMansion.com. All right. Well, we're going to talk here in the opening segment about small business. And if you own one or you're an entrepreneur and have dreams of starting one this year, even as we still struggle through this COVID era, we've got a couple folks on the line that are going to be able to talk about some great resources that are available to you. I'm so pleased to welcome Lisa Mercurio and Nelson Martian. They both represent the Connecticut Small Business Development Center, CTSBDC.com is their website. You can go there to learn more or follow along as we chat with these two. Nelson's a business advisor. I ran into him at a small business ribbon cutting up in northern Fairfield County a couple of weeks ago. And when he handed me his card, it reminded me that it's been well over a year since we had somebody on talking about SBDC. And we're pleased to have you back. This organization and its business advisors like Nelson offer professional and confidential business advice for owners to overcome challenges and reach their goals. Nelson, first, tell me a little bit about yourself. How does one get into the position of being a business advisor?
John, thank you so much for the invitation. We're so happy to be here with you. And that is correct. And I'm a business advisor with the CTSBDC, Connecticut Small Business Development Center, and we provide a no-cost confidential advising. We have a powerful set of business management tools, and we have a network of 20 advisors that covers the whole state of Connecticut. So I used to be a business owner, and then I was a volunteer also for SCORE. And there was an opportunity to join the team of the Small Business Development Center in Connecticut. And it was an opportunity that I couldn't say no to. And I'm so happy. I have been working for SBDC in Connecticut for the last 7 years, helping a large number of clients in the greater Danbury area. And in fact, last year, we serviced about 2,000 small business clients in Connecticut, and we helped access them about $49 million in capital. So those are numbers that are important for us because it's all about results, and it's all about access to capital. It's also about creating new businesses. And back in 2019, we helped 140 entrepreneurs start businesses in Connecticut. And I'm so happy that two of them were located in Newtown, And that's where we met again at one of them at Phoenix, a very nice grocer and Phoenix Newtown.com, a wonderful place in the same location at the Butcher's Best Country Market.
Yeah, yeah. And what was the best thing, I think, Nelson, about our new friends at Finney's Specialty Market there in Newtown was that they actually planned to try to do something like that in Portland or Seattle in the Pacific Northwest. They arrived to begin that quest right when COVID hit over the winter last year, and things became so challenging that they decided, well, we're just going to go back to Connecticut. An opportunity opened in terms of space, and then they decided, well, we're going to stay here in Connecticut. One of the two owners was a Connecticut native, and that's how it all gets started. But I also want to stress that, Nelson, the Connecticut Small Business Development Center, while it is Connecticut-centric, it really offers a huge wealth of resources because it's part of a larger national network, right?
That is correct. Yeah, we have we meet every year at a national conference, and so over 1,400 business advisors from the whole country, and also from Latin America and Canada and other places meet, so that we can network and we can learn new techniques and be up to speed in what is happening in businesses in the U.S. So the network is incredible, and the service around the country will always be free and confidential.
Excellent.
Let me just talk about the tools.
Yes, yes.
So number one, access to capital is very important. So we have a very strong team, and we love to work with the bank the business owner is working with. But if there is a need, we work with any lender that is a good match for the client. We also have a tool called Growth Wheel that was initially developed in Europe and is now being developed here in the U.S. And it's an amazing tool that allows our clients to make decisions faster. So it's all about decisions. As you can imagine, we claim that we want to do better and we want to increase sales, but it's hard to change. So this tool and our business advisors want to contribute making better decisions faster. Mm. So that is key in today's world. It's key pre-COVID, and we want our businesses to survive. We want our businesses to excel. So we have a big challenge, but we are prepared. And we have been doing a lot of work with small businesses and with the SBA programs. And it's all about being there for our clients. We have had 2019 was a challenging year for us, but we were able to help a very large number of clients. We almost have doubled the number of clients that we had in 2019. And we are doing now events almost every week, so free webinars. Mm. And also for our clients, we have a help desk. So we're really all about our clients, our small businesses, and our entrepreneurs who want to start businesses. Mm. It's incredible, being able to offer this type of service to small businesses and entrepreneurs in Connecticut.
Very good. Folks, if you're just joining us, Nelson Marchand is talking with us. He is joined by Lisa Mercurio. They represent the Connecticut Small Business Development Center, a part of the larger network of America's small business development centers. I ran into Nelson celebrating one of his latest business clients at a ribbon cutting in mid-December, and reminded me to bring them back on the program. Connecticut SBDC has been on a number of times over the past decade, and pleased to have them back. First time since the arrival of COVID-19, Nelson. And I'm wondering, you as a former business owner, a former SCORE counselor, and now a business advisor for the Connecticut SBDC, could you talk about one or two of the businesses that you have been working with over the past year, and some of the ways or a couple of examples of how those businesses were able to survive and sustain and maybe even grow, even though they were faced with all of the burdens and challenges that the virus pandemic brought?
Well, PhoenixNewtown.com, the company that we talk about that is located on 125 South Main Street, is one of the examples of entrepreneurs who decided to come back to Connecticut and decided to try their best. They had the experience, they had the vision, and they said, you know, we're going to make it happen. And so in those cases, as you can imagine, having a good business plan, having financial projections for the next 3 years on a monthly basis, it matters. It's very important. And they have the experience from working in New York and Boston and other parts of the country. So they have the knowledge and the experience to be successful. They just launched a new program. It's Dinners for Two. So you place the order before 9 p.m. on Tuesdays, and you pick up on Tuesdays between 4:30 and 6. Something very creative. The place is really an enjoyment to be able to buy carefully curated selections of high quality foods and goods. So highly recommend to visit. And as you can see, something in common with successful business owners is that you see a well designed website that is nice to visit, is nice to navigate the website. It talks to the client, it talks to the visitors. AquilasNestVineyards.com is another interesting business that started recently, a couple of months ago. People just fell in love with it. And again, it doesn't happen by random access. It happens because there is a lot of thought behind the concept. There is a strong business plan. The financial projections are there. The concept is solid. So I don't know if you have visited that vineyard, but it's just an amazing place in Sandy Hook.
Yeah,
and I remember reading one of the reviews from a person who went, and she said the outside fire pits are a delight on a cool, starry night.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend this new gem in town. So it's a combination of good thinking, a good business plan, financial projections, and the team.
Yeah.
It's so relevant to have a team. And I always remind business owners that they are not by themselves. They are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
They have their spouses. They have friends. They have you. They have neighbors. They have competitors. They have economic development in each town. They have a network of people who want to see them successful. And, of course, we want to be part of that conversation.
Yeah,
SBDC in Connecticut want to be part of that conversation.
Yeah, and I guess it's even more important for people who are in home-based businesses and consulting and, kind of working out of their house or working virtually as the sole center of their business, because they don't even have, a spouse or coworkers or staff and competitors and customers walking in every day to interact with. For the folks that might be listening that are more entrepreneurial and want to start their own either virtual business or home-based business, do you have some advice to offer to them?
Yes, John. In fact, yeah, we work with 1099 contractors and also with self-employed. Most of our clients have, I would say, less than 10 employees, but some of them have 50 and even over 100. And we want all of them to be successful. And in the case of home-based businesses, we invite them to come to our website, citysbdc.com, and register. A general suggestions, you know, the messaging has to be strong. It has to be clear. You know, we don't want another business that is average, you know, because average businesses will perform average. So I always invite my clients to be outstanding, to have an amazing product and to have a messaging that is clear and direct. Mm. I think that that's very important. I ask my clients, would you buy cookies from somebody who sells cookies, and the name of the company is Cookies from Heaven? Mm-hmm. And usually the answer is yes, I will definitely buy them. So it helps to make the messaging very direct, and it helps a message that that talks to the client, and we can you know, have more clients faster, and hopefully, you know, the cookies are so amazing that mm-hmm. they will come back for more. That's the idea.
They make you say, "Oh my God, those are good cookies."
Yep. I know. So, you know, so the whole package, the whole branding has to be there. It's not something complex. It's easy. It's not easy. It's not difficult. It can be done. And yep. we need to do it. Yep. There is no way about it. We have to do it.
Well, in the last few minutes. So go ahead, Lisa.
Well, I was just going to say, and to your point, we actually, on January 28th, have a free webinar scheduled on how to start a business. There's been quite a lot of press recently about the number of businesses that have started during the pandemic period. Yeah, yeah. So we encourage you to take a look.
So they go to ctsbdc.com and get registered or look up the details on that.
Yeah, you go to ctsbdc.com/category/training.
Okay.
And you see all the events that we have available. In many cases, you will see our advisors and also people from the SBA. So
yeah.
As the PPP program gets you know, the new developments, you yes. know, we want to inform our clients and others of what's happening and the latest information available. So highly advisable, you know, become a client, join our newsletter. We'd love to have you.
Okay, great. And the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Nelson and Lisa, another really good long-term friend of the award-winning For the People has been Junior Achievement. And we're hearing more and more from them in recent years about how the demographic of the entrepreneur in Connecticut is getting younger and younger. At the same time, we hear so much about veterans, women, and minority entrepreneurs wanting to take that next step and get legit. And that is a fertile opportunity for folks to get to know the Connecticut Small Business Development Center. You guys work with youth entrepreneurs as well as veterans, women, and minorities, right?
That is correct, yeah. And usually with young students who are in high school, I have been invited to a few events in Naugatuck and also in other towns to talk to students who are in a special program. I don't remember the name right now, but it's all about inviting them to become entrepreneurs, to start making money on the side, and to start thinking about tomorrow. And that's exciting. So that's on the younger side of the group. And regarding the other group, we are highly interested in supporting minorities and the group that you mentioned to be successful with a business. It's not just starting. It's about making sure that the business is profitable.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate you both taking time to chat with us and all of the folks who might be listening out there who either have a business that want to kickstart it or take it to the next level, and those who may be transitioning or just starting in the world of business here. The Connecticut Small Business Development Center provides comprehensive business assistance, and that is their mission. They also offer an amazing array of free resources, tools, and online trainings to offer businesses help along the way. One of them is coming up at the end of January, and ongoing training, webinars, and other opportunities are available for you, along with business tips and all the information you want to know, testimonials and such, as well as COVID-19 recovery resources. It's all at ctsbdc.com. Nelson Marchand and Lisa Mercurio, thank you so much for being on the program this morning. Well, as we hit the midpoint today, we're going to be talking about hunger and how the Center for Social Impact at Fairfield University is partnering with had partnered with Norwalk's Healthy for Life project to conduct research, study, and report on food access in the city of Norwalk. Although a lot of the information that we're going to be talking about this morning with Fairfield University's director for the Center for Social Impact, Melissa Kwan, and research coordinator Jonathan Delgado, probably has some implications in many other locations that are listening in this morning. So I'm sure our guests are going to offer some really important information that could have some bearing on you where you live here in Southern Connecticut or around the state or wherever you might be listening on the podcast. So Melissa and Jonathan, Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having us. Yeah.
So it sounds like the back end of your 2020 was quite busy working with the city of Norwalk. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about the collaboration by starting with a little bit of background on the Center for Social Impact. Melissa, what is that office all about?
Sure. So the Center for Social Impact was founded at the university in 2006. And, you know, basically we exist to help connect the community and the campus through the co-creation of learning and research activities that are aimed toward addressing urgent issues that are really defined by our community partners. And we engage faculty and students in that work as part of their learning and research experiences as well.
Excellent. And Jonathan, as research coordinator, are you a staffer at the university or are you still a student there and just kind of elevated to this sort of management level?
So I am a staffer, but I started as a student. So I was just graduated actually in August from the Master of Public Administration program.
Excellent. Well, tell us a little bit about your assistants. I see Muhammad and Lucario, Eileen, and Sophia all worked with you guys. Tell us just a little bit about the framework of the project, and then Melissa, I'll ask you or Jonathan to jump in and also tell us a little bit about the Healthy for Life project and how that all kind of pieced together with the work you wanted to do.
So I think the project really came out of, conversations happening around the food sphere in Norwalk, and Teresa from the Healthy, she's from the Norwalk Health Department, but, you know, part of the Healthy for Life project, mm-hmm. found a report that we had done in Stanford, you know, of a similar structure, but definitely a more, elementary version of what we hope to accomplish with this. And we had an opportunity with Muhammad, who's since graduated from the university, but was in the health studies program and in need of a capstone project. So we thought that this would be, you know, an opportunity to try to bridge, you know, his requirements with what we were hoping to deliver. And so, you know, we spent a couple weeks kind of getting him up to speed with GIS and finding ways that we can, you know, turn this into a learning opportunity so that, you know, he can gain some new skills, but, ultimately build out the report with the data that was required. So Eileen came in from another course, helping us to edit the content and build the more textual elements of the report. And Sophia Lucario helped a lot with the overall structure, getting it all the pieces in order and making sure that, you know, we could get this thing as production ready as possible.
Fantastic.
Melissa, tell us what you can about the Healthy for Life Project, because our friends from the Norwalk Health District had to take a break and not do the slot today because they had to do just some small chore having to do with COVID vaccines. So obviously, right. that took significant priority over a chat here on the radio this morning. So no worry about the sound effects there, Melissa. Just what can you tell us, or what kind of attracted you, or was the impetus for partnering specifically with the Healthy for Life Project?
Sure. So the Healthy for Life Project is a coalition of organizations, agencies, and residents, Norwalk residents, who are convened by the Norwalk Health Department. It was formed about 2 years ago. And their mission is to really reduce and prevent obesity and chronic disease through the promotion of healthy food. So the Norwalk Health Department is responsible for addressing chronic disease prevention and obesity through a larger kind of regional community health improvement plan, and recognizing the importance that healthy food and being able to access healthy food, how important that is to those topics of obesity and disease prevention, they created the Healthy for Life Project to really focus in on that aspect of the work.
Mm-hmm. And did your earlier and more scaled down a project in Stamford engage a similar kind of multi-point initiative?
It did. So it was around that time, the Community Engaged Research Program that Jonathan heads up within the Center for Social Impact. It's one of the newer programs of the center, and we were really just getting started. And the work that we did with a food coalition in Stamford, specifically with the United Way of Western Connecticut, we were kind of helping them to understand to really kind of through mapping and through visualization, help draw some correlations between different demographic variables and access points to food.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you,
and so that was kind of, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as you folks reminded me in the advance, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is estimating that more than 14 million U.S. households have a lack of consistent access to sufficient food to sustain an active and healthy life. So in respect to that, you know, how did you actually come at and utilize how did you come at the development of this food access report?
Probably ask Jonathan to take lead on that, and I can chime in.
Jonathan, go.
I think, you know, similar to what Melissa was just saying, you know, we've talked to our partners, and when you look at something like food access and you know, the necessary demographic variables to try to understand the populations affected by it, it's really hard to do when you're looking at you know, townwide or otherwise aggregated information. So, you know, when it came time to look at this, one of the main focuses was how could we visualize it, but break down the information into sizable chunks in an actionable way. And so, like, you know, graciously, you know, Norwalk Axe helped out. They had laid the groundwork in matching census tracts with otherwise known neighborhoods in Norwalk. And so we used that, to help, you know, spread out the information that we could grab either from the census or other data points. So we could, you know, take what would otherwise be right aggregated at the town level and really parse out what differences lie within the city.
Mm. So it sounds like you really wanted to tell the story of food insecurity, but I'm curious as to part of the reason why and how this is actually going to inform and help the Norwalk's Healthy for Life Project.
One of the major data points in the report came from food insecurity estimates developed through Craig Gunderson and the Map and the Meal Gap Project and data that we got from the Connecticut Food Bank. So I think one of the first parts was being able to actually show what some of these estimates could look like within the city. I think, you know, that's one of the first maps and one of the first, you know, data points that we expressed in the report was to be able to have policymakers and those in charge of some of these programs and agencies to be able to recognize where help could be used the most.
Mm. So while the issue of hunger is really a very individual crisis in some cases, it sounds like actually aggregating and displaying this data in different ways, particularly through mapping, it really gives the Norwalk Health Department an important tool. Excellent.
And that's what we aim to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Melissa.
Yeah, no, I was just going to add to that. You can see, you know, through the visualization where there might be concentrations of impact of a particular need or issue, and then see how that correlates with available services, with transportation lines, and so forth. And so it can help organizations if they're planning to, for example, develop a new program, to really be able to see where the need is within the community. And I know the Healthy for Food Project wants to use this to inform their programming and their strategic planning. When they reached out, they want their work to be data-driven. And I think, you know, if Teresa was here, the way that she would say it is, you know, when you're an organization with limited resources and maybe don't have the staffing and capacity to generate data, you know, you really want to apply those resources in the most effective way possible. And so for her and for her team, that means data driven.
Excellent. Well, I was going to say, we're going to come back. We're going to take a quick break and come back and find out a little bit about why this work is also going to be of interest to the broader public, and to talk about school food distribution and some other important points as we return with Melissa Kwan and Jonathan Delgado. They are both with Fairfield University's Center for Social Impact. Stay with us. We'll be back to talk more about food insecurity and this important new work in just a moment. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your own neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Seniors, caregivers, and family members are invited to participate in an upcoming free webinar offered by Wesley Village Senior Living Communities. The webinar is called How to Keep Your Loved One Happy and Healthy in the New Year, and it's scheduled on Tuesday, January 19th from 2 to 3. The webinar will offer tips for getting a healthy start to a new year and share some simple ways your loved one can start or continue being physically active, engaging their mind, and improving their overall emotional health and well-being. To register, call 203-225-5024 or visit umh.org/wesley-village. We're back. Thanks for joining us. Melissa Kwan is here. She's Fairfield University's director for the Center for Social Impact. She's joined by Jonathan Delgado, a research coordinator for the center. They both collaborated with a number of student colleagues, as well as the Norwalk Health Department's Healthy for Life project, on a brand new report examining population distributions and other important demographic variables as they relate to food insecurity. That's something we talk a lot about on this program, especially in communities in Fairfield County. And we already heard a lot about how the Norwalk Health District and the leaders of the Healthy for Life Project might be able to utilize some of this work. But Melissa and Jonathan, I'm now interested in turning your attention to helping folks, maybe not even just in Norwalk, but in our entire listening area, access and learn a few things from this report. Melissa, let me start with you. What's the benefit to the general public getting a hold of this and reviewing this information?
Well, I think it helps the general public to just understand issues relative to their local communities. In this case, their very local communities. As Jonathan was saying, it's not just about talking about Norwalk as a whole. It's talking about specific neighborhoods that are familiar to people and that are really meaningful to people. It can help them to understand where resources exist, where maybe they didn't know they existed before. It can also help them to understand where there's a lack of resources and where their advocacy is needed to generate the resources needed by their community or for their community.
Mm-hmm. And Jonathan, in your opinion, how could someone, a nonprofit, a community leader, or even just a citizen or an individual who's interested in enhancing or sustaining food security in their community, look at a report like this, or even the one you earlier generated out of Stamford, to get some ideas of how they might be able to accomplish similar things in their community?
I think... you know, one of the main things is recognizing vulnerable populations. Right? A report like this helps to highlight, you know, spatially, but also just numerically, right? Like how many residents within a specific area are receiving food stamps or SNAP, as it's now called, or, you know, seniors. Do they tend, you know, when you're spatially organizing data like this, it allows you to recognize those gaps like Melissa was mentioning. So, using a report like this really helped to recognize these patterns and things that wouldn't otherwise be able to be seen, or not just if it was, you know, solely numbers, and definitely if it was aggregated.
Hmm. The report on Norwalk, I guess, is also going to be important because it's going to be helping to inform school food distribution. Which one of you can tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. When we were, you know, talking with Teresa earlier this week, thinking about this, having this opportunity to speak with you, she began to share with us some of the ways that the city has been using the report and some of the ways that they would like to use the report down the road. And one of them has been around, informing school food distribution, which is normally distributed at the site of the school, but using the visualizations to inform where it might be helpful to set up community-based distributions versus school-based distributions. And if you kind of think about applying that to the context that we're in right now with COVID, it's not always easy for people to get places if they don't have access to a car, if they're not on a public transportation line. And the report helps to show that. It helps them to think about setting up distribution sites in places where they will be most impactful and where people may not have easy access. Similar with, a mobile food pantry that the Healthy for Life Project has the goal of creating. Mm. Using the visualizations, they can see where locating that mobile food pantry will be most impactful because they can see where there are concentrations of need, but perhaps not agencies already set up to support that particular neighborhood or community.
And if I understand correctly, this report is not really just going to exclusively serve Norwalk, but it's going to create some synergy from Stamford all the way up to Bridgeport.
Yes, we've been working with partners in Norwalk, in Stamford, and in Bridgeport around, you know, similar questions and similar needs to inform program, to use data to inform program delivery, and have been finding that this visualization of data is very impactful, effective, and helpful for organizations and communities. The other thing that we've been really driven by is hearing our communities partners talk about the importance of food pantries in ways that have really expanded my understanding and perspective on the importance of pantries. I think we often think of them as emergency stopgaps, but really they can be sustainable sources for people that need to access them on a regular basis. Mm. And if these individuals are struggling with particular health needs that require, certain nutritional input, then pantries become something more than just an emergency stopgap. They are part of the overall health and well-being of a community and of an individual or family's life.
Yeah, sort of maybe even a gathering place where folks who come there can learn can not just pick up some bags or boxes of food, but get access to information about community gardening or starting their own garden, community health resources that can play into the whole Healthy for Life project's goals. It really sounds like this report that you generated for Norwalk is going to have legs. Are there plans in the works to try to take this type of study to other communities in the region?
Yes, we've been talking with other partners in Bridgeport, and one of the things that we're really focused on right now is helping to understand the impact of COVID-19 on food security in these communities. The Norwalk Food Access Report was really a report that was developed pre-COVID. And so I think we all have an awareness of how acute the food insecurity needs have become within communities across the United States. And so that's really where we're focusing our energies right now, is to try to help kind of give a better picture of that, tell a real story around the impact of COVID.
Excellent. Well, it's wonderful to hear about the great work that you folks are doing and how it could have implications, not just in Norwalk, but across Fairfield County, and indeed perhaps across the state of Connecticut and beyond. I applaud your work and your initiative, and I look forward to chatting with you folks or others from the Center for Social Impact at Fairfield University again as new projects develop. This research team included my guests this morning, Director Melissa Kwan and Research Coordinator Jonathan Delgado. We also send appreciation to student researcher Mohamed Kamara, editors Lucario Alcidi and Eileen Mashad, and outreach coordinator Sophia Gouriotis. We're working alongside the Norwalk Health Department's Healthy for Life program to help all residents access healthy food and meet their nutritional needs. I want to thank you, Melissa and Jonathan, and we'll look forward to talking with you and your initiative again soon. Well, we're wrapping up our program this morning, talking education with Markel Middleton. He is the director of school choice and enrollment for New Haven Magnet Schools, that organization's open application period is beginning on February 1st, and they're planning a virtual open house for parents who are interested in learning more about the magnet schools in New Haven. Markel, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you, obviously your administration level with the as director of school choice and enrollment. Did you come from an education background? Kind of worked your way up as a teacher and into doing this more broad application of your skills?
Oh, yes, definitely glad to share. So I've never been a classroom educator. Coming out of college, like many people, figuring out what you wanted to do, but always wanted to have a career and role that impacted lives. So I've worked in classrooms with the Gear Up program previously, helping kids get to college in social development skills, and then went on to work for the Connecticut State Department of Education in research and data for about 9 years, and then just coming home back to New Haven to take on this role as the enrollment director of magnet school. So
right. Well, we hear a lot about school choice, but
yes.
When we slap that term around, what does it actually mean?
Oh, I think that's a great question. It's when people hear school choice, I always let them know it is an umbrella term that covers so many aspects. But if you break the word down, school choice, that's really what it is. It is the movement and the opportunity for parents to have a say-so about what public school their child goes to. So for many schools and many districts across the country, when you hear the term school choice, it may relate to students opting in or enrolling at charter schools or different various type of magnet schools that have specialty programs as well. So when parents have the opportunity to elect or say exactly what they want for their child's education and where they want that education.
So how does school choice look like in the neighborhoods and community that you serve in New Haven?
Yeah, so school choice is really big in New Haven. We have over 40 schools in our district, and we serve more than 21,000 students. So for over the last 20 years, New Haven Public Schools has been invested in inter-district magnet schools, which are schools that attract students from both New Haven and the surrounding suburban towns to come and be educated together. And what's something unique about our schools is they all have really unique magnet themes. But school choice is a hotbed topic in New Haven where parents really desire to have a say-so in where their child goes. So whether it's a local neighborhood school or a magnet school or an inter-district magnet school, and we even participate with some of our local charters. So those are options for parents as well to say, I want to opt out of the traditional public school model, and I'd love to have my child educated at the charter school in my community as well.
Well, I have to say, regular listeners to the program got to hear about one because one of the only places that I was able to venture out to over the whole summer of COVID, and you know, going out spring into summer toward the end of the school year, was the agricultural magnet school there in New Haven. And
yes, Common Ground.
Common Ground, the first agricultural charter school in the United States.
Oh, wow.
And we played that the program a couple times and got a lot of great reactions from it. And believe me, I'm sure a lot of people in communities across Connecticut and Long Island and other areas listening to the program wish that they could have that type of an organization. But it sounds like New Haven has an extreme wealth of specialty charter schools. Tell us a little bit more about how the charter schools kind of play such a critical role along with all of the other public schools in New Haven.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we love Common Ground, and they are truly partners of the district. And for years, students who are residents of New Haven have said, I would love to study agriculture and environmental science, and have gone on to learn and do great at Common Ground. We have about 4 or 5 charter schools in our local area, and through our lottery application, those are options for parents to say they'd like to elect for their child to be placed at one of the charter schools. So those are definite options amongst all of our other options, and they're really popular. So some of our charter schools, such as Achievement First and Booker T. Washington Academy, and of course Common Ground, are just overwhelmingly popular options for many of our parents in grades kindergarten to 12.
Are there other specific specialties that are the focus of certain charter schools in your under your purvey?
So each of the charter schools has a specialty and something that makes them unique and special, but I wouldn't want to misstep or misinform anyone. I'm not an expert about the charters per se, but like for example, Common Ground, their specialty is environmental science, but would not want to misspeak and give you the wrong information about some of the other charters, they're great. And you can always go to newhavenmagnetschools.com, and all the schools that are options in our lottery are there, including the charters, so we like to highlight them as well.
Well, you mentioned lottery. Is that how the students are selected to attend those schools?
Yes, that is correct. Like I said, we have over 21,000 students in our district, so the demand is so high. And as you know, with a single school, everyone can't go. So for that reason, we do have what we call a lottery or school choice placement process, which is the same thing. It's essentially a lottery, but we do give certain priorities to students. So if there's a school that's in your child's backyard, literally, it's up the street, that may very well be the neighborhood school. So if you'd like to go to that school, there are preference points chance given in the lottery to that applicant to say, yes, there are a lot of people that want to go to this school, but we want to prioritize the fact that this student lives in is zoned to that school based on our school zoning plan, or if that child has a sibling already attending, we know that that makes it easier for families to have their children in the same school. So we do give preference points in our lottery as well.
Very good. So I guess the odds of a child being accepted to the school that they want to attend really depends on the number of students applying to be at that school, right?
That is 100% correct. And that is a question that we get each and every year from parents who really want to know the odds of placement. If school A is the most desirable school for a ton of students, like you're saying, it's very hard to place everyone there. So parents are always looking for their odds. And one thing we've done in the last 2 years is work with Princeton University and a team of researchers who have helped us expand our transparency and our data tools around our lottery process. So we piloted last year what's called a simulator. Parents were able to go on and do a mock application and to simulate their chances of placement based on the previous year's results. So we're also looking forward to expanding that tool this year on our website so parents can go on and say, if school A is the school that I want to go to, I want to know what are my chances when I look at the previous year's data to see if my child will get in. So that's one of the transparency tools we're super proud of.
Excellent. Well, what are the benefits for suburban students? Because I guess it's important to remind people that New Haven public schools are not exclusive to New Haven students, right?
That is correct. So we do have 16 inter-district magnet schools, so that 16 schools our surrounding suburban towns can choose from. What are some of the benefits for suburban students? There's so many. So at our pre-K level, we are one of the very few districts in the state of Connecticut who offers free pre-K. So at those, some of our pre-K to 8 schools, suburban students can take advantage of our free pre-K programs, and then they'll stay with us right on through 8th grade and hopefully the 12th. So that is a benefit. We do have free transportation from most of all of our suburban surrounding towns, so the parents don't have to drive their kids into New Haven every day. We'll send the bus to go and get them. And then just our themes are really unique. So what you're not going to find in some of the surrounding suburban towns are elementary and middle schools that specialize in art or that specialize in STEM. Most of the surrounding towns have general education focuses, but we put a little bit extra into our education, spice it up with a specific theme. So we have so many themes. So those are just some of the few benefits that suburban families can take advantage of. And one thing is that we strive for diversity. That's why inter-district schools were put into play in Connecticut, as such that New Haven residents can learn from suburban students and vice versa. There is still so many things that suburban students stand to learn and gain from being in classrooms and being educated next to individuals who are not from the same area as them, that may not look just like them or may not be from socioeconomic backgrounds from them. But I think it prepares suburban and New Haven students to take on the world, because the world is a melting pot and looks so different in every segment.
Great. Well, Markell, in the last minute or so that we have with you, I guess the place that people can start getting questions answered is going to newhavenmagnetschools.com. But you're also offering a virtual open house.
Yes, we are. So you can definitely check out our website, www.newhavenmagnetschools.com. And on January 30th, Saturday, January 30th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., we'll host our first virtual expo. I think everyone's up in arms. We usually do a large school in person, but with COVID, we can't do that. So we are taking it virtual this year, and parents will be able to log on right from our website and pop into various live presentations of all of our schools and see all the schools have to offer, and as well talk live and chat with teachers, principals, and students from those schools as well. So help inform them about the different schools, and hopefully they'll consider attending one of our schools and applying in our application that opens on February 1st.
Markel Middleton is the Director of School Choice and Enrollment for New Haven Magnet Schools. Markel, thank you so much for your time this morning. Happy New Year and best of luck with the open house and getting all those kids back in school as we start bidding this whole COVID-19 issue farewell. It should be an interesting year in 2021, and I wish you luck. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.